Hello, my name is Connie Kenny. Today I'm going to interview Barbara Barker Parker. Barker is with a B like boy, B-A-R-K-E-R, and Parker is a P like Pat, B-A-R-K-E-R, so Barbara Barker Parker. We are at the Butte Archives, Butte River Bow Archives in Butte, Montana, and the date is March 9th, 2011. So I'm excited today to do this because it's a different look at the Irish from what the English thought. And I think we're all going to enjoy this, at least I hope we will. And so here we go. Now, Barbara, you're from Centerville. Your family's from Centerville. Actually, your family's from Cornwall, England, to start with. But let's tell everybody so that we can acquaint people with Butte, Walkerville, Centerville, Dublin Gulch, and all those parts. The people who came from England and Ireland must have been horribly shocked to come from sea level to about 6,200 feet. Can you imagine how exhausted they were and how tiring? And if they wanted to even go up a few more feet, I'll bet they were breathless, so to speak. Now give us kind of the dimensions of Centerville, because that's what we're going to be talking about today, Centerville, and really how the English felt about the Irish and how the Irish felt about the English. It's going to be fun.
Connie, so nice to be with you today, and what a golden opportunity for me. I'm doing some research on my family and on the Cornish in general, and this is a great opportunity for me to share some of my thoughts with it. My family originates in Cornwall and does come here to Butte. I am sure when you, if you're familiar with the environment of Cornwall, it's very lush, it's very green, it's very rural, and for my grandmother to have come from that type of an environment to Centerville, which at that time she probably couldn't see the street in front of her because of the dust, there was nothing growing, nothing green. I'm sure she thought she was at the end of the earth. And altitude-wise, Cornwall sits at a much lower level. Therefore, I'm sure she was tired. I had trouble breathing. At that time, you either took the streetcar up to Centerville from Butte, or you walked up. And I'm sure that was exhausting for her. And so I would have to say, just the environmental change of from one place to another, she must have thought, should I go back home?
And I think many of the women who came after their husbands dragged them along, some by buckboard, some by train to a certain point when there were trains, some by horseback. I can't even imagine what they thought, because as you say, it was all dirt. When we're talking about street, we're talking about dirt, of course. Now we have Butte sort of at the bottom of the hill, and Butte's courthouse is about 5,600 feet above sea level. And then next, what do we have?
As you're going north, up on the richest hill on earth, as we say, there's a whole series of neighborhoods. But in general, as we head up toward the hill, which is where the mines are, is where we have the beginning communities of Butte. One of the early settlements are Walkerville and Centerville, which are on the top of the crest. Walkerville was settled by the Walker brothers, and Marcus Daly, of course, worked for the Walker brothers. Now that's at the crest of the hill, up on the top, Walkerville. As you head down the hill, the next community is called Centerville. And following that, then, it heads down into Butte. The uniqueness of Centerville was the Cornish and the Irish both settled in Centerville. Why did they pick Centerville? Probably the early settlers settled there because at that time there were approximately 60 mines in operation around Centerville and Walkerville. So when the miners come and are looking for work and get work, the first thing they want to be is close to where they work, because they're going to walk to those mines. They're going to walk to the mines to get to work. They're going to walk home. So there's no reason for them to be in downtown, or we say downtown, the closer they were to the mines, the better it was. And that's why Centerville developed. As the Irish came, as the Cornish came, and the other ones, immigrants came, they wanted to be close to where the work was. That's why they were here. So the communities of Walkerville, which also was Irish and Cornish, and Centerville, which was Irish and Cornish, developed and became communities just to serve the miners who were there to work in the mines.
Certainly, and it was so interesting because, as you say, they had to be next because they didn't have any transportation. And I think in the old days when it was 40 below and they came out of the mines and walked home, it was a wee bit chilly, wouldn't you say?
Very much so.
Now, what we're talking about today is Centerville, and then there were other communities by Centerville and Walkerville, right?
Mm-hmm. Corktown, Muckerville, Dublin Gulch. In fact, in some of the research that I've been doing, I'm finding some communities that I didn't even know existed. There's a place called Seldom Seen up at out of Walkerville. There's another one up outside Walkerville called Hungry Hill, which is patterned after a community in Cornwall, and so on. So yeah, a lot of these little communities developed just around them.
And you're finding out in your research, and of course all of us know too, each of the groups, we'll just today mostly talk about the people from Cornwall, the people from Ireland, sometimes got along, sometimes didn't, because they were, that was the idea, was to live in a community with the other people with whom you had come to the United States, or you wanted to be around the ones that were already here, hoping they'd help you out a little bit. And tell us a little bit about your parents first, and then we'll talk about your great-grandparents.
My dad and my mother, my dad was born here in Butte. He was, he's the native of Butte. And the irony of it is he didn't marry a girl from Butte, which is unusual because a lot of people did. In fact, he not only didn't marry a girl from Butte, he married a girl from Portland, Oregon. And the crowning glory was he married an Irish girl.
Ooh.
Which I am sure his Cornish mother and father felt was unacceptable. But the marriage continued and was very successful, possibly because even though her ethnic background was Irish and German, her name was Frances Catherine Murray.
Can't do better than that.
She never subscribed to the Catholic faith, and that might have been the deciding factor with my grandparents, that she joined the Methodist Church and her children were raised Methodist and so on. That made her more acceptable to my grandparents, even though she had the Irish Catholic name. And I might also add that throughout her life, after she married my father, she never used the middle name of Catherine. She always used Kay. It was Frances K. Barker. So Frances K. Murray actually disappeared when my mother came to Butte.
I see. And we have a wonderful picture, which is going to be Exhibit 1, of her in her fox fur and her swell hat. Now, I think we know what the young maidens of Butte thought when your father arrives from Portland, where he had gone to help out a little bit, and brings home the new bride, who's really dressed to the nines, so to speak. And your grandmother was the matriarch of the family, as were most of the women. As far back as we go in history, it appears that the patriarch wasn't really the patriarch. It was the matriarch who was the boss of the family. Now, as I understand it, your mother and dad moved in with grandma grandpa. That must have been something. Whoa, right?
My folks were married in about 1929, and of course at that time that's the Depression. There aren't a lot of jobs, there's a lot of work, and they didn't have the money really to rent a place or to buy a place at that time, so they moved in, and I've often heard my dad and mother talk about, they had a business at that time called the Barker Paint up in Centerville, and everybody worked in the business. At the end of the week, if there was only $5 that was made in the business, then the $5 had to be split between my mother and dad, my grandfather and my grandmother, another aunt and uncle. And so you can imagine by the end of the week, there was really not a lot of money.
Oh, heavens. Isn't that just amazing? And then you had an interesting family yourself. and brothers and sisters, and maybe we should start with your oldest sister.
My oldest sister, Narma, was actually a cousin who was adopted by my family upon the death of both her mother and dad. Her mother committed suicide, and her father died of consumption cancer, same thing, in down in Warm Springs. She was adopted by my family. My mother and dad did not have any children for 5 years after they were married. And then they had a boy, and approximately the same time, they two or three years after that, they adopted my oldest sister. So they had Bud, the boy, Narma, my older sister, or my cousin, really, who it was. And then 5 years later, they had a set of twins. And 13 months later, they had another girl. So they had a boy, 5, a girl, 6, set of twins, and but probably, you know, about 13 months old, and then my younger sister. So 5 children.
5 children, and you are one of the twins.
I'm one of the twins.
Now, this presents quite a chore for your mother, because your dad, as you said, was in Barker Paint. And did he travel with Barker Paint?
No, he didn't travel with Barker Paint, but he, as the community of Centerville blended down eventually with Butte, he went to work for Fuller Paint in downtown Butte. And at that time, he was a salesman, so he used to travel. He had an area that he would cover, Twin Bridges, Anaconda, Helena, and so on. So he made that trek, selling paint and wallpaper and glass and so on every week. He left on Monday and would do the trek, stay overnight in those towns, and then he would be back on Friday. But my mother in Centerville with 5 kids, she did not drive a car, and she and my grandmother for a while was still there. They were the matriarchs in the family, and they were the ones that kept the families going.
And they had to.
No one else was available.
Now, it's kind of neat too about Centerville. Keep in mind that Centerville is probably not even a mile square, probably. And we were visiting about this when your mother was home, no car. But in Centerville itself, there were doubles of many things. And now tell us about that.
My grandfather, when he moved to Centerville, and I'm sure the reason he went to Centerville from Cornwall is because there were Cornish people already staying there. You know, it's just like the saying on the front of the archives, you know, don't stop in New York, go directly to Butte. I'm sure when they left Cornwall, they said, hey, go to Butte, there's some Cornish cousins there, some cousin Jacks and some cousin Jennies who will take care of you, so go there. And when he came to Butte, I never heard the family say he was interested in settling any place but in Centerville, because Centerville is where the Cornish were. He was comfortable there. Now, in Centerville, within the first 20 years of that settlement, say from possibly the 1880s through the 1900s, that community thrived in Butte. They had Sons of St. George, which was the fraternal organization of the Cornish. They had the Ancient Order of Hibernians, which is the fraternal order of the Irish, and both of those lodges were set in Centerville. My grandfather said, the town will never move off the hill because the mines are on the hill. Why would it move off the hill? It's going to stay right here. In turn, they built the Trinity Methodist Church in about 1898. And then up the road, probably 2 or 3 blocks, the St. Lawrence Church was built, one to serve the Methodists, one to serve the Irish.
And by the way, we have a picture which will be Exhibit 2 of the Trinity, and Exhibit 3 will be of St. Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And this is just so neat. Oh, and we also have an exhibit of the St. George Hall, which mm-hmm. will be Exhibit 4. Mm-hmm. And number 5 will be the Ancient Order of Hibernians. And so we're delighted to have those too, because that will show what we're talking about. Now, to continue.
In addition to the fraternal organizations and the churches, of course, St. Lawrence had a school, a Catholic school for the Catholic students, and right next to the Methodist Church was the Blaine Public School. So you had two community, or you had a community living together composed of Irish and Cornish, each with its own fraternal organization, each with its own church, each with its own school. Then the community develops into a community where you have two barbershops, one by Mr. Rowe. Mr. Rowe serves as the Cornish, and one by Mr. Hansen, I think it was, who served the Irish.
I love it.
Oh. There were two paint stores, the Barker Paint, where the Cornish went to get their wallpaper and paint and so on, then the Hooper Paint, which was down the street, where the Irish went to. So there was camaraderie. There were some things that weren't duplicated, but for the majority of them, there was. And these people lived together in this community. And I'm sure at times there were conflicts and so on. But to live in that small of a space and be able to survive like that, it's just been marvelous.
And at the time, grocery delivery was available, thank mm-hmm. heavens, because mm-hmm. most of the matriarchs were home mm-hmm. all day. Mm-hmm. Of course, couldn't take all the children to go to the store. So that used to be a thriving business. And there were probably two grocery
That's
stores,
right.
were there?
T.J. Bennett's had a big mercantile on the corner of Center and Main. And we also had the little, there was a confectionery shop that sold candy. Pearl Shea had a small store. So there was really no need, if you can imagine this, there was no need to go downtown Butte. Everything you needed was in Centerville.
And to go downtown Butte, mm-hmm. it was such a long trip down that straight
sure.
hill, and then to have to walk back up that straight hill.
Mm-hmm. Or on the streetcars as they later came in.
Yeah, when the streetcars came mm-hmm. in, that was a blessing, so that mm-hmm. people could get somewhere else off the hill. How did you get along with the neighborhood kids? And were there, I know there were Irish and Cornish next door to each other, mm-hmm. and then, but when it gets to be St. Patty's Day on March 17th, then things sort of heat up, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What happened at your house?
As long as I can ever remember, my family, my grandparents and my parents, both let us know that there was definitely a difference between being Cornish and Irish and being Protestant and Catholic. So as far back as I can ever remember, I knew that difference. Even though the kids in the neighborhood went to a different school than we did, went to a different church than we did, and we did play together in the summertime, I knew that there was a difference. They didn't come to our church, we didn't go to their church, and so on like that. But to step back a little bit further than that, my family tells the story about my oldest sister, Norma, who was adopted. When she would play in the front yard, we had a small front yard, my grandmother would not allow her to play with Catholic kids.
Yeah.
Now, my mother and dad did not say that we could not play with Catholic kids. But the generation before that did say that they couldn't. And so we would play with them in the summertime and so on like that. But we had two different lives. I mean, their lives with the Catholic Church and the Catholic schools were full during the year, and ours were too, with the Methodist Church and the public schools and so on. There was congeniality. I don't ever remember my family not having respect for the Irish ladies that were in our neighborhood, and them also having respect for my grandmother and for my family too. St. Patrick's Day, my mother, in fact, I always tell a story, people say to me, was it tough to grow up in Butte? And I always say, yes, it was tough to grow up in Butte. My family were Republicans in a town that was predominantly Democrat. My family were Methodists with a strong contingency of Irish. And my mother and dad were Methodists. Methodists and Irish, Republican and Democrat, and then Methodist, or whatever. Anyway, but when St. Patrick's Day came around, my mother would, when everyone else dressed in green, my mother would dress us in orange and send us to school. And of course, consequently, sometime during the day on St. Patrick's Day, we'd have rocks thrown at us, or we'd gotten beat up or something. We would go home and say, "Mom, kids are throwing rocks at us because we've got these orange on." She'd say, "You go back, keep the orange on and you go back." So there was a strong sense of the orange, sense of the importance of orange as far as Cornish go and so on, and that was an opportunity. And at one time in the early days, you know, there used to be a St. George Day.
Oh, sure.
That they celebrated like St. Pat's.
Which I think is in March.
It could be.
I think it might be, yeah.
And other than things like that, we were not, it wasn't that we weren't allowed to date Catholic boys, but many of our fathers said to us, and I've heard this from some of the other Protestant girls, "Well, we don't mind if you date him, but don't marry him." So there is there's that that stigmatism that the Protestants and the Cornish have attached to that. I think my grandmother brought a strong anti-Catholic, anti-Irish attitude with her from Cornwall.
Were your grandmother and grandfather married before they came from Cornwall?
No. He was from Cornwall originally. He came here to Butte looking for mining and so on, and then went back to Cornwall, and I imagine proposed to her at that time. Then he came back, then she came back, came here to Butte. They were married at the family home at 970 North Main here in Butte.
And your home is still here?
My home is still here.
Is that amazing?
Yes, it's still here.
And
yeah.
That's going to be Exhibit 6,
okay.
With your family home,
mm-hmm.
Which really is unusual because so many of them are gone.
Right.
Now, your grandmother...
And prior to that family home, my grandmother ran a boarding house across the street from it, and there's a picture of the boarding house here, too.
Well, we'll that make that to, number 7.
That stands next to the Sons of St. George. So you get the feeling after a while that the whole community is just centered right around, and maybe that's why I've tried to find out why it was called Centerville, and I haven't been able to. And the thing that I'm wondering is it happened to be the center. Everything is centered right around here. So.
Now, your grandmother ran the boarding house,
mm-hmm.
And so where did they live in the boarding mm-hmm. house
it
at
was
the
a
time?
Two-story, and they were downstairs. It wasn't a true sense in the boarding house that they opened it up to everybody. The boarding house had bedrooms upstairs, and she would rent maybe two or three of these out to some of the Cornish boys.
Cornish boys. Yes.
So it wasn't equivalent to a large boarding house as we know in Butte, but it was there to take care of her family or some of the new ones coming over. So,
did she also pack their lunches or
mm-hmm.
feed them breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or what was the deal?
In fact, some of my aunt and some of the other individuals were like the bucket girls, set up the lunches ahead of time and send them off in the morning to send them over to the mines. And so it just wasn't on a big scale.
Now your grandmother too was sort of like an entrepreneur, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
She started buying up a few of the little, I guess we'd call them little shacks.
Right.
And started sort of the Baker Realty.
Barker
Realty. Oh, that's hilarious. And how did she do that?
Well, my grandfather, of course, is in the Barker paint business, which, of course, dealt with wallpaper and waste coating. That's the wood that goes halfway mm-hmm. up the wall, and painting. And I think he might have been a little bit of a carpenter on the side also. He had been injured in a mine accident and then got out of it and decided that he wasn't going to go back into mines. He was going to go into business, which is a common trait for the Cornish. I think between the two of them, what they would do is they would buy these little miner shacks in Walkerville. She had some in Walkerville, she had some in Centerville. And then her husband or one of the boys would fix it up, put new wallpaper in it, paint it up and everything, and make it presentable, and then they would rent those. And then I can remember her and my dad going around once a month to collect the rent of the little houses. I should do some research to find out how much the rent was, you know, and so on like that. But that was some income on her part, yeah.
It wasn't that something?
Yeah.
That was really amazing for a woman.
That's right.
To do that.
Mm-hmm.
And how smart of her, because it brought in income.
Mm-hmm.
and around they go every month, and probably most of those were rented to young minors.
True, yeah, I would say, you know, young minors or young minors with families, probably, you know, and so on like that.
It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. What sort of traditions did you have at Christmas?
Family, very much centered on family, big dinners, a lot of food. Of course, the church was a big, our church, the Methodist church, like with other family that were spiritually involved, the church played a big issue and was a big part of our lives. There was always church singing and Santa Claus and Christmas trees and getting together for Christmas services and so on like that. But I might tell you something else. My mother was very enamored with the midnight mass at St. Lawrence Church. To explain to you what the inside of the Methodist Church looked like as versus St. Lawrence, the Methodist Church is very, as far as when you walk in, it's very plain. There isn't a lot of, I don't want to say excitement, there just isn't a lot of things in the church. It has pews and it has the altar and so on. And so my mother loved music. She was quite a singer, loved the music. And at Christmas, I think midnight mass is right before Christmas Eve, and she and a couple of her friends used to sneak sneak up to St. Lawrence Church, probably sat in the back row so nobody could see them, and listen to midnight mass, and how much she enjoyed that choir and how much she enjoyed those voices. So, but she didn't tell everybody. I think most of the time, the kids were in bed, and somebody was taking care of us when Mom sneaked up to
I love that. Well, I think that's great.
But the church was a big part of this, and of course, always had a big Christmas dinner, and all kinds of relatives came. Again, the sense of family with Cornish, the cousins came, and aunts and uncles came, and so on like that. Didn't open our presents until the morning. So many times we'd go to church the night before, again up to the Methodist church set just right across the street from where we live, so it wasn't a problem getting to church. You could walk right across the street. Traditions, one thing, my mother used to bake saffron buns. I don't know if you're familiar with saffron buns.
Oh, sure.
Well, that was one of the things we had at Christmas time, were saffron buns. And of course, saffron buns are very much a Cornish delicacy. And so on, but I would have to say that's probably the only thing I can.
Now, did you have any of the special candies or anything like that?
My grandmother very much would be into candies from Cornwall, the Horehound candies, they were called, little black ones, or Lyle's Golden Syrup. She used to make almost a peanut brittle out of Lyle's Golden Syrup. We used to get those things at Christmas time again only. Hard candy. Loved hard candy. My dad loved hard candy. My grandmother loved hard candy. So I think a lot of that is from Cornwall and so on.
Now, what about the pasties? Did you have pasties at the holiday, or did you have pasties all the time?
Had pasties all the time.
I was going to say every day.
Had pasties all the time, and used to watch my grandmother make them, and that was a family tradition. Everybody in the family had to learn how to make pasties, and my grandmother had a special way of making them. She put kidney suet in the crust.
Ooh.
And she liked her pasty with rutabaga in it. And so but she was a good pasty maker. And it was, in fact, when my mother came to the family, they said, well, kind of on a probationary basis here until we find out if you know how to make pasties.
So, oh, I bet.
And so she'd struggle through it. She turned out to be a pretty good pasty maker, but. How pasties, rather than just at Christmas time, I don't remember ever going to a picnic at the reservoir or a picnic to the gardens or a picnic to any place. The pasties weren't the main item. Everybody made them, everybody brought them, we ate them and so on. So it wasn't a delicacy per se, but everybody knew how to make them. And it was just part of the tradition, very common.
It is interesting, too, about the fights about the pasty recipes,
yeah.
Which still continue mm-hmm. today. Here we are in 2011, mm-hmm. and I've never been to a funeral, to a wedding reception, to a reunion, to a picnic, where there aren't pasties. So
that's right.
or a football game, or any kind of a thing. And then everybody fighting about, well, I put this in my pasty and you should have put that in your pasty. And it does create a great deal of controversy just over the pasties.
Now, my grandmother would look at my pasty making, even though she's the one that taught me to make pasties, and I can make a pretty good pasty. But when I don't have time, then I make a pasty instead of rolling out the crust with the kidney suet in it, which I can do. I go and buy a Pillsbury pie dough.
Uh-oh.
And make a quick pasty out of that. Well, grandmother would not be happy with that.
Oh, Grandma.
Yeah.
I know you're listening, but we want you to plug your ears right now. The barber could be used. Oh, my goodness. That would be frightening.
Shortcuts.
Now, in the summer, you said you played a lot of games, as I guess we all did as young people, mm-hmm. because we have to remember that we didn't have TV. But after school, we had the radios mm-hmm. and listened to such things as the Green Hornet, Sky King, Sergeant Preston.
Yep.
Did you do that? Fibber McGee and Molly.
Fibber McGee and Molly, yeah. Yeah, listen, and spend a lot of time in front of the radio. I can visualize our front room where my mom could be darning socks. My dad was probably asleep on the couch if he was home. And us kids would all be in front of the radio listening to something, you know, if a musical program or something like that. But the radio was and we had... one of the Christmas presents that we got was a radio for our bedroom, which we thought was wonderful. Just a little portable radio that we could listen to at night when we went to bed.
Ooh.
So, you know, so
now you're a musical family, so you probably had maybe the record player going a lot.
We had a record player also, and of course we had 33 and a third and 78 and all kinds of records around, and so on before TV. My dad taught us kids all to dance. He was an excellent dancer, and he used to put the girls on his feet. We used to stand on his shoes.
Oh, fun.
Walk us around, and consequently, all the kids in the family were good dancers, and we'd put those records on, and we'd dance all the time and sing. Not that we were that good as singers. My mother was an excellent singer. That was the radio played a big part in our lives. It really did, and, you know, as far as that goes, we were in the choirs at church and things like that. So I'm sure even in grade school, we probably did some singing at Christmas or something like that at a play at school.
It had to be in the plays at school. Yeah. In the old days.
Everybody did.
Everyone was in those
yeah.
wonderful plays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then outside, I suppose, because Centerville's sort of on a hill,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you could roller skate, you might end up at the bottom 5,000 feet down.
I might tell you that I have left Butte and came back again. My husband and I have retired here. I never realized how steep the hill was getting up to Centerville. My aunt used to say, she lived to be about 94, and she said the reason my legs were in as good a shape as they were is because she used to walk down to Butte to go to high school and then walk back up for lunch.
Whoa.
And then walk back down after lunch and then walk back up at the end of the day. But I didn't notice how steep the hill was until I left and came back in. But you're right. Anything we ever did up there was on the side of a hill. And, we played kick the can, and we had ice skating rinks up there, and we had roller skate. We used to roller skate an awful lot in front of the school and so on. Again, that sense of community, there was always something to do. I don't remember ever staying home and saying, Mom, I'm bored. I couldn't wait to get out of that house in the morning to get out and play in the summertime. And we used to have plays in the garage. We used to dress up. We used to play kick the can. The sirens at night were always the key. At 9 o'clock, it's time to go home. We always went home. The neighborhood watched us. My mother had no concerns as to where we were because there were other people in the neighborhood who were watching us. We used to get dressed up, and I don't know if I shared this with you, but as Methodists, we were very enamored with the Catholic Church. And the Catholic Church, St. Lawrence at that time, was open all the time. So we had Catholic friends, and we talked them into taking us up to the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
We get all dressed up in big hats and high heels and long dresses, and we would go up to the Catholic church. Now, we couldn't take them to our church because our church was locked all the time.
Oh, didn't seem fair. Yeah.
But we would go up, and they'd show us about the holy water and about that you had to kneel and the votive candles. And we just, that was the highlight of a day for us to be able to go up there. We knew we were not supposed to be in there. But it was, again, so exciting to go up there. And the church was so beautiful and had so many icons and so many exciting things, much more exciting than the Methodist church was.
And I'll bet that as most kids that go into a Catholic church, I'll bet the confessionals were of interest.
Very definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the sliding panel and all those sorts
exactly,
of things.
Exactly, yeah. We always want to know what was behind the altar, because those were mammoth, big, decorative altars. We weren't familiar with those at all. So.
And so your mother didn't, or your grandmother did not know you were there.
No, we wouldn't have been there.
You wouldn't have been there. So you, and then I suppose you jumped rope and all the fun things, hopscotch, and all the things that people used to do
right.
before the computer age and before the age of television.
Mm-hmm. Spent a lot of time outside. Did a lot of playing on ore dumps, did a lot of playing on streets that weren't paved at that time. In fact, I might say that this summer they have finally put cement sidewalks up through Centerville.
For the first time.
In 2010. 2010. Prior to that, we had wood sidewalks, and when the wood sidewalks gave out, they had asphalt. This is the first time I've seen cement sidewalks.
Isn't that just a kick? But so many happy days, and then of course, there were sad days too, because there was no money.
No.
As you said, $5 among seven or eight people. That's just incredible.
Yeah.
Now, how did the Barker Paint Company, did they expand, or then what finally happened to the businesses in Centerville?
I think as Butte did expand, I mean, we had our communities up there. You had Walkerville and Centerville, but as people started coming into Butte, when we get to the point where we have close to 50 or 60,000 people, they're not going to be living up on the hill. They're buying down here, and of course the mines are expanding, and the business area is expanding down here. I think what eventually happened, even though some people stayed up there in those communities, the demand, the businesses, there wasn't a demand for them up there like there was before. Streetcars came in, cars came in, people were able to get in
go
the car.
Go somewhere, yeah.
And go down here. So Centerville was still there, but it wasn't the thriving community. There were times when people from Butte would come up to Centerville to shop. Not only did we have like T.J. Bennett's store, but one of the early branches of Hennessy's was right behind the Mullen House. So
really?
People would come from
neat.
From down Butte up there to shop at Hennessy's. And so, but I just think as the town expanded and transportation got better, I think the streetcars, we used to have streetcars in Centerville, and I think then people just branched out and so on. And there was always a problem with, there was an idea in Centerville that the company never wanted to give up the land because they were never ever sure how good the ore was underneath it. We were always in the impression that my mother and dad owned their house, but underneath it was always owned by the company.
I think that was true in most areas of Butte. We owned the top, but we didn't own the bottom.
Right. And I think that encouraged a lot of people to get off the hill and to go out into the flat and buy a house where they felt more secure because the company didn't own the land underneath. They owned it themselves. And so I think there was sort of a movement off. And of course, after the pit came in, there was even more so of a movement.
It is interesting, too, that even now, a lot of people still live in Centerville and Walkerville in the homes that were occupied by their relatives, but mostly probably by their grandparents and great-grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Many have siding on, but they are the same home underneath.
Well, and I think grandma and grandpa stayed there, and then when they died, they gave the house to the next generation, and some of them fixed it up. And some of them, I think there's probably some with the third or fourth generation in the same house up there.
Which was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And what a deal it was to have a house. Considering that in so many of the big cities, people didn't ever have houses,
mm-hmm.
they had apartments.
My dad's idea of success as a family was for him to buy the house in the middle of the block and to have all five of his kids buy the house on either side of him.
Oh, I see. I don't think that probably happened.
No.
Oh, that's his
family,
idea
of
success.
Of, yeah.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat, isn't it? So many wonderful passages. What were your grandmother and grandfather like? Well, we know your mother was, your grandmother at least, certainly the matriarch.
Right.
So that involves quite a bit of discipline and,
sure.
and you're going to do this and
right.
you're going to do that and you better do this and you better do that, correct?
That's exactly what she was. She was a cold woman she was strong and aggressive. I think when she came from a fairly well-to-do family in Cornwall, she had a good education. She had gone to a finishing school, and I think when she came here, as I said before, never having been here before and came here to get married, I honestly think she thought, "Where am I at? You know, is this the end of the earth?" She stayed here. She died in 1950. Her husband died in. She was a widower here in Butte longer than she was a bride. So she outlived him and stayed here in Butte the whole time. She might have gone back a couple times to visit, but for some reason she did understand, or she had this idea that I married for better or for worse. I'm going to stay with it. You know, it may be the end of the earth, but it's my end of the earth, and this is what it's going to be. But I think a lot of her unhappiness in being with Butte also had to do with her unhappiness with life in general. But she always felt she was a little bit better than her neighbors and
relatives.
Oh,
yeah.
Finishing
school.
Finishing school.
I think we could count on one hand, on one finger, the people that went to finishing school.
Right. And was able to speak French when she came over here. So.
Oh.
But she always kept a clean house, and I've seen her out sweeping the street.
Oh.
You know, just to make sure everything's fine. But that's a... But she was tough and she was hard. She was not an emotional lady. She was not a kind lady. But I think she just said, "I'm going to make the best of my lot, and I'm going to see that my children are successful and they have enough to eat and they have opportunity for education and so on." And she succeeded at that.
Now, did you know your grandfather?
No, not at all.
He was gone.
He was gone.
Mm-hmm.
I do get the impression from other members of the family that he was not in any way as aggressive as she was. He was a good worker, but she was the one that that made the determination.
About everything.
Yes, what was going to be done, how it was going to be done, and who was going to do it. And most of the males in the family that she was surrounded with were willing to, I guess, buy into that philosophy. In fact, I not only can hear her yelling at my dad, "Harry, do this." I can hear her yelling at my brother and the two or three generations. She was still running the family when I was growing up.
Isn't that cute? What about your mom and dad?
My mom spent a lot of time alone, as I have told
you,
because my
yes.
dad was gone. And my dad did have a good job. I've run into many people later on in life who said, "Oh, I remember you in Centerville, you were rich." We weren't rich. People thought we were rich. We had a nice house. And again, my family made sure that we had nice clothes and enough to eat and so on. My mother and dad did not drink. My mother didn't drink at all, but you didn't have to worry about, my dad wasn't at the local bar drinking up
the money,
the paycheck or anything like that. So people got the impression that, and my mother used to complain all the time that my dad was so busy out painting everybody else's house and Centerville, and he never had time to come home and paint his own. But I just think, again, that's that background, that Cornish, you know, have a nice house and kids are dressed nice and you do nice things. So I would have to say my mom and dad were very successful in that. Of the five kids, four of us have college educations, some of us even beyond that. And both of them lived. My mother lived until she was 89. My dad lived until he was 94.
That's amazing, isn't it? And wonderful.
So I'd have to look back and say, yes, I think they had a successful, they were married for 60-some-odd years. And so I think they were very successful.
You know what's nice about that, too? They lived to see all of you educated and going your ways in life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which very few
get to live that old.
Yeah. Now, once in a while, you got to visit your mother's parents, apparently, mm-hmm. but did they ever, they were the ones in Portland, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And did they ever come and visit in Butte?
No, never came to Butte, but my mother would take us over to visit them periodically, summertime, or we'd go on the train at Christmas time or something like that. But her father was, as far as we can tell, was shot in San Francisco, so he was a realtor or a gambler or something, and so again, we have the strong mother, again, raising the family of five kids by herself. She was a janitress in the local school and so on, but seemed the matriarchs in these families are strong enough to be able to pull this off, to support the family. And my uncle was sent away to college. He has an electrical engineering degree. So the strength of the women in these families is just astronomical.
Oh, I think it is too. And what they had to put up with and what went on.
Yeah.
And as you say, Cornwall and Ireland, both so green and lush.
Mm-hmm.
And then to come to community, when they came,
mm-hmm.
we had the smelters going and the whole place was just full of smoke. You couldn't hang the sheets out because they'd be turned brown.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine what they felt like that first day. You could just see them coming. Maybe in a buckboard,
mm-hmm.
up if they came with the train,
mm-hmm.
then they came in the buckboard.
Yeah.
But they might have had to come all the way from Salt Lake, many of them. And to see all the brown, we had taken the trees,
mm-hmm.
to build the mines,
mm-hmm.
underneath, and the timbers were used.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, I can just see it. And again, the altitude. Oh, it must have been utterly amazing.
Well, I remember my grandmother, for entertainment, used to get on the bus. Now, living to be as old as she was 92 when she died. All of her friends were gone by that time. She outlives
right.
everybody. So a day for her would be to get on the bus and go out to the cemetery, out to Mount Moriah. And she would spend the day at the cemetery because this is where all her friends are.
Oh, sweet.
She'd put on the bonnet and the white gloves and go on. But a tradition in our family wasn't a Christmas tradition, but it was a tradition. Once a week, my dad would say, come on, kids, we're going to the cemetery.
Once a week?
Yeah. Well, the reason
yeah.
we had to go once a week is because grandmother had live pansies in front of the tombstones. And if you have live pansies, they have to be watered.
Yes, indeed.
And so that was the idea. If we all got in the car, we'd go out to the cemetery, we'd water the flowers, and then we could get ice cream cone after that.
Oh, a little reward.
And then it was funny, I was at the university and we were in a psychology class and the instructor was asking people, well, what did you do, you know, what were some of the traditions of your family or what did you do for excitement when you were kids? And in this room full of students, I started talking about going to the cemetery. And the students and the instructor were looking at me like there was something wrong with my family that took their children to the cemetery for entertainment. But we loved it. We went out and watered the... All we were interested in was the ice cream cone at the end.
Of course.
But
now, did you take the water?
No, they had spigots out there.
Oh, good.
But what you had to do is you had to find the can. So there was a
yes.
can in a tree someplace, so you got the can, filled it up with water, and then we'd water. See, my family had about 6 plots out at Mount Moriah. And every year, my grandmother made sure we'd go out to Fritz's Flower Shop and get tin containers, and she'd have those pansies planted every year. But they had to be watered once a week or the pansies would die.
Sure.
She'd go with us in the car and she'd pick all the old flowers off, and then we'd water them, and that was a big treat for us. We didn't think there was anything wrong with our family.
Not at all. In fact, the same thing. Well, I think maybe we all do, because we all have plots in these older cemeteries, and all of our friends and family are there. And also, I think it's interesting too, when you finally did get a car, all of you were piled in there, which you wouldn't have been able to do in the seatbelt age.
No.
Because everybody had a big family, and we were all on top of each other's laps and everything. When you look at the modern day from the old day, mm-hmm. with the cars, and of course there was no air conditioning, and boy did it get hot in those cars sometimes. Then you had the window down, so you had all the dust in your hair and your face.
In the back seat, we'd have Grandma with the hat and the purse, the white purse and the white gloves,
right,
over the cemetery, and white shoes. In the back seat also were probably three of us kids and the dog.
Oh, the dog. The dog got to go to the cemetery.
Well, we didn't let the dog out, but the dog wanted to go for a ride.
Sure.
And no, we didn't have to worry about seatbelts. Half of us were standing up in the back seat. And so, and Grandma, prim and proper, sitting in the middle.
I think all of our grandmothers were the prim and proper. Even in Butte City, mm-hmm. everybody, of course, they didn't ever wear slacks or anything, but they always had on the hat and the gloves and the heels.
Never went downtown. You didn't get dressed
never
up.
Oh no. Or to church.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting too that the two churches that you mentioned, the Methodist Church, the Trinity, mm-hmm. but you're down to about how many people?
I think there's probably 28 to 30 people left. Yeah. And that's kind of unique that in doing some research on the Trinity Church, that was called a miner's church. There are a couple churches in Butte called miner's churches, and that's one of them, because they're saying the church was built for the miners. Mountain View, which is downtown, is called a mine owner's church. So you had miner's churches and mine owner's churches. But the Trinity Church is just, it is the last church in operation up on the hill. Because St. Lawrence is open for other things, but it's not a practicing Catholic church any longer. So that's the last one up there is Trinity, and it's still in operation. And I've had people look at it, and they say, "Did you know that it's built similar to the Cornish churches in Cornwall?" And I said, "No, I didn't know that." But the community of Centerville built that church for the Cornish. They had an organization there called, or it was an organization of young people who got together and were going to do good things for the community and so on, and it was called the HU Club.
Oh.
And HU stands for Higher Up.
Oh, you're kidding.
And that organization was started in 1926, and it is still today in our operation.
Really?
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's...
And it has maybe about 15 members.
Mm-hmm. The HU?
HU Club. Stands for Higher Up. My mother was a member of it, and I am too.
Oh, all right, I see. And you're going to do good things.
Do good things.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, isn't that fun?
Yeah.
And then the paint company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did some of your family live above bark or paint? Mm-hmm.
When my grandfather built the paint company, and we have a picture of it here before it was expanded on.
So we'll call that... Eight, Exhibit
paint.
Eight,
right.
Paint company.
That's what he built, or that's what he decided to do when he got out of mining. And then I think the boarding house across the street was not, or actually may have had too many families in it. And so then they decided to build a living area above the paint. So it became a two-story place and make that into, that's an exhibit. I brought you one of those too. So you can see the living area up above the paint store and the paint store down below.
Downstairs. So Exhibit 9 will be sort of the upstairs, mm-hmm. of the paint company. Now, that's where you lived, or that's where your grandmother lived?
My grandmother lived upstairs, and then the house behind the paint shop was a house that my family owned. And who lived in it first of all would have been Norma's mother and dad lived in there first. And then I said they both died. Then the family gave that house to my mom and dad, and then they lived in it. And that house is still in operation, or still up there. It's no longer in the family, but it's still up there. But it was kind of like, it was the house that they kept for the relatives.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, right. And they really took care of each other.
Yes, right, very much so.
And that was why I go straight to Butte. Don't be stopping.
Oh, yeah, don't be stopped.
In America or somewhere. Yeah. Go straight up because somebody will help you.
Find out where the Cornish are and they'll take care of you once you get there.
Isn't that neat? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love the cousin Ginny and the cousin Jack. Mm-hmm. And a little bit about the cousin Jack when they would get to the mine.
They'd get to the mine, and in fact, many of the Cornish miners here in Butte would come to Butte because the Mountain View mine was called the Saffron Bun.
And was called the Saffron Bun?
Saffron Bun. Yeah, that's that was the nickname that went with it.
Oh, I love it.
It's in fact, we weren't sure exactly where it was. It sat up behind the Anaconda Camp where the Seven Stacks are. It sat up in that area there. And they hired just Cornish miners.
Oh. Yeah,
just no different than, you know, when Daly would hire just the Irish
miners.
Irish miners,
right.
Like that. And so, you know, if one of the bosses said, well, I don't know, we need some other guys in this stoop down here or something, the Cornish would say, well, I got a cousin Jack. We'll call, you know, we can get him over here. We'll send a letter and he'll come over here to work. So the cousin Jack, and then when he came over and brought the wife with him or whatever, she was called the cousin Ginny. But that's where Cousin Jack, Cousin Ginny comes
from.
Isn't
that neat?
Always have a Cousin Jack over in Cornwall that's willing to come to work in the mines.
Yeah, and think of the trip by the time the letter got there. And then you packed up your stuff and came across the pond. Mm-hmm. It was a long time. Yeah. Now, you did have a relationship going as a family with the Mountain Con. The Mountain Con was the sort of the east part of Centerville, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Renoirs lived in there,
right.
As the superintendent in the mine, mm-hmm. in the house, mm-hmm. inside the big fence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Centerville is split right in half by Main Street, going down the middle of it. So, in fact, actually, one thing that I'm doing some research on right now, the first school ever built in Butte is called the Adams School.
Hmm.
And it was built on Mullen Street in Centerville.
Now there's a good mm-hmm. piece of history.
Mm-hmm. And then the Mullen, it was only grades 1 through 4. And then what happened, they built the Blaine School. And the Blaine School, then the Adams School disappears because the kids from the Adams School go up to the Blaine. But that was the very first school in Butte, was the Adams, was up there. And that was very close to the Mountain Con fence. And I'm pretty sure that the company gave that land so the school could be built there. Inside the fence was very fascinating to us. Though my grandfather was a miner, I'm not familiar with that generation. My dad was not a miner. He was he always, you know, had other jobs. So we did not live in a family where the father came home from mining every night and could tell stories or relay incidents and so on. So the mine background or the mine environment was really something that we knew nothing about. The Renwall family, and he was an official at that time for the Anaconda Company, had a very lovely home behind what we say behind the fence of the Mount Con mine. It had a swimming pool in it. It had an ice skating rink in it.
Whoa!
And basketball court and handball court and things like that. And the Renwalls were very nice to the people in Centerville. And we knew if we went up and asked permission that Mrs. Renwall would let us skate on the ice skating rink, which was very nice. They had a warming house where the kids could go in and get warm.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it really was a treat. And I was always thankful. You know, I always looked at the Renwalls with the ice skating rink like W.A. Clark and the Columbia Gardens. Wow, wonderful. So they would let us go up there and skate. It was kind of an unfortunate incident with the pool. The pool was for the family. They didn't open that up to the public. But one of the, my first grade fellow students climbed the fence and was drowned in the pool. So of course the pool had to be covered over. But that was an exciting time for us to be able to go by the fence and see all kinds of things that we'd never ever seen before.
Oh, I'll bet. I think that you were running the streets, you told me one time, and I want to know what was that. And then we might mention the sewers. Come on, confess.
Ran the streets and ran the sewers. We would run through open sewers. I'm aghast now to think that we were running through sewers that had actually raw sewerage in them. But that was kids. We were outside every possible time. Even in the wintertime, we were outside. Of course, the environment was, it was stark, it was cold or hot or whatever, but we entertained ourselves by, as we said, running the streets, running the sewers, running the ore dumps, things like that. You know, we just, curiosity and so on like that. I don't remember now. I didn't go downtown a lot, but boy, as far as I remember, taking off with a sack lunch and going up behind Butchertown and behind Walkerville all by ourselves. We used to go over to what they called Yankee Doodle Gulch, and behind that was the Valley of the Blue Moon.
The Valley of the Blue Moon. Whoa.
But I think my mother always trusted, you know, that we would come home, and we never got into any real deep trouble. I think we pretty well knew what the line was to cross over, but just spend a lot of time outside and entertaining ourselves.
And you could, and you always had kids with you, and in those days, you could mm-hmm. run all around
right.
because it was sort of like the earliest neighborhood watch.
That's right.
Everyone was watching out for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason you didn't get in trouble was because the guy next door and the guy down the street in the top of the hill
mm-hmm.
knew who you were.
Knew who you were.
Yep.
And they wouldn't have any trouble at all calling up my mother and telling her. And we had bikes, you know, we could take off on our bikes and go places. And so we just, we really worked our neighborhoods. We really did. And there was a sense of belonging there, you know, in spite of Irish and Catholic or Protestant and Catholic and whatever, Cornish, there still was a sense of identity with Centerville. I remember after I went to high school, and I would go to the mixers, and I would a kid would say, "Can I take you home after the dance?" And I'd say, "Yeah." And he'd say, "Where do you live?" And I'd say, "Centerville." And
he'd say, "Never mind.
I'm not taking you up there."
Not taking you there? Are you kidding?
So there was a stigmatism attached to Centerville as being tough and always willing to get into a fight and so on like that. I suppose the same with Walkerville.
Well, I can say, I think, maybe a little bit of truth there, right?
I often said that I didn't realize till I went to the University of Montana the girls didn't fist fight. When I got down there, I couldn't find anybody else to fist fight.
To fist fight? Or to beat you up when you wore that orange on St. Patty's Day.
That's right.
One of your neighbors were the grandparents of the 12 Downey kids.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat Downey
mm-hmm.
told me that he used to beat you up too. And then he'd laugh like heck, and then you were all great friends after.
I'll have to tell you a story about that. It wasn't with Pat, but it was with Jimmy McGarvey. I had a twin sister. And Jimmy McGarvey used to leave his house and go up Main Street to confession at the St. Lawrence Church. And I used to beat him up on the way up.
Oh.
Then after confession, he'd come down the street, and my twin sister Betty used to beat him up. And he used to say, "That Barker girl is the toughest girl in Centerville," not realizing
that there were two of you. Oh, I love it. Isn't that funny? Yeah, and those were certainly the days. And in the winter,
mm-hmm.
you probably built snowmen, built snow forts, played, what is that? There's something you run around in the snow in a circle, ducks and geese,
yes,
or geese
yes.
and fox,
yeah,
fox
and
geese.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Plum pum pull away. We did a lot of skating on the volunteer fire department. Used to, I think that one time there was 11 rinks in Butte that were flooded. by them, and we spent an awful lot of time. We used to collect the Christmas trees at the end of Christmas, and then we'd have a great big bonfire down at the ice skating rink, and so on. And Butte was very good as far as having competitive races for kids to skate in, and speed skating, and all kinds of things. So there was a ton of, we used to hook cars, buses, you know.
I don't think the kids know about that right now.
Hooky ball.
Yeah.
It was, we shouldn't have been doing that. That was not
no,
a.
That wasn't a great.
Yeah, that wasn't a great thing to do.
But we did grab on a little bit and mm-hmm. just take a little spin.
Yeah, and you had to watch out that your mittens didn't freeze on the
onto
the bumper.
That's right. And then sleigh riding from Centerville must have been the most exciting.
Yeah.
It would be like the luge maybe in the Olympics.
Exactly. We'd start at the top of Center Street and we'd end up at the Finland Hotel. The bad thing about it is you had to walk home.
Yeah, and drag the sled. That, of course, same if you rode the bike down the hills to try to get the bike back up again.
That's true, that when we used to do the long runs to the Finland, we could only do about one a night, because it was a real fast trip down, but it was a long trip coming back up, pulling the sled.
And the sleds, and we were able to sled in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And people really, we always called it sleigh riding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, boy, does that date you if you say sleigh riding nowadays.
And we'd build ramps with snow, and then you'd come down a mountain like this, and then come off the bottom of it.
Fly off for a jump.
Gosh, more kids had, in fact, I'll tell you a little story about when my mother was by herself and my dad was on the road. He was doing his territory, and what happened is, Betty came down, my twin sister came down the street, ran into a telephone pole.
Oh.
And of course, my mother didn't have a car, so she calls a cab, takes Betty down to the emergency room in St. James, and consequently what she did was break her arm.
Oh.
So at that time, reporters from the paper used to sit out at the emergency room to get news, and Clayton Maxwell was sitting in the emergency room, and he said, "Hello, Mrs. Barker, what are you down here for?" And she said, "Oh, I think my daughter broke her arm." So my mom takes my sister home. She gets home, my brother is swinging on the front gate. He falls off the gate, hits the cement. She has to take him down to the emergency room. He's got a broken elbow.
The same day?
Same day, same afternoon. Blake Maxwell is still there.
Oh!
He said, "What are you doing back here?" And she said, "Well, now I think my son just broke his arm." Anyway, my dad opens up the paper in Bozeman the next day, and Clayton Maxwell has an article in there about the two Barker kids with the busted arms. He calls up my mother and says, "What are you doing, beating up on the kids?"
Oh my, your
Again,
poor mother.
No car, you know, these are the things that happen.
And the lack of transportation for those women, why the men were at work was really, I'm sure it was a huge challenge.
Yeah.
And as you say, when you get hurt
yeah.
and you have to get to the hospital, how are you going to get there?
Call the cab, right? Remember, you know, many times we'd get on the bus, but she'd have to take the three or four kids together, you know. You're right, to get downtown.
And then you did go to the Columbia Gardens, I'll bet.
Went to the club, couldn't wait for Thursday to come. So get on the bus and go out there and spend the whole day. Thought it was wonderful. Absolutely.
All of you
wonderful.
Would go?
Oh, the kids would go on Thursday. And as I say, many times, my family went there for picnics. And you know, organizations that my mom and dad were members of would have picnics and so on. We'd go out and have a big lunch and then go down and ride the roller coaster and the biplanes. And lots of fond memories. Lots of fond memories.
So you really had a wonderful childhood when you look at it.
I think so.
Yeah,
even though
pretty
I was,
good.
Even though I was born and raised in Centerville.
Barbara was born July 17th, 1940, in Centerville. Also, Exhibit 10 is of her family, a wonderful old picture. All people are identified. And Exhibit 11 is a clipping from the paper concerning Barker paint. This is the end.